This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. This week on the Relic Radio Show, our hour begins with The Sealed Book. We'll hear an episode titled The King of the World. It first aired March 25th, 1945. Then we'll hear from Incredible But True and Death Has a Will. We'll finish off this week with The Avenger, an episode titled The Eyes of Shiva, that first aired June 29th, 1945.
The Sealed Book.
Once again, the keeper of the book is ready to open the ponderous volume in which is recorded all the secrets and mysteries of mankind through the ages. All the strange and mystifying stories of the past, present, and the future. Keeper of the book, what tale will you tell us this time?
What tale shall I tell you? I have here tales of every kind. Tales of murder, of madness, of dark deeds and events strange beyond all belief. let me see. Yes. Here's a tale for you. A tale of a man who stole by force the secret of immortality, of life everlasting, and entered into a mad adventure. The title of the tale is King of the World. Here is the tale as it is written in the sealed book. It is late at night, and the wind howls over the desolate countryside. In the darkness, a man runs frantically through the woods, trying to elude his pursuers.
I've got to shake him, or it'll mean a 10-year stretch.
Stop, or I'll shoot!
That's twice they got me in the same arm. Oh, here's a house with a light in it. My only chance. If I stick to these trees, they won't be able to see me. I'm almost there. Here's a door. It's only unlocked. Oh, it is.
Good evening.
Now listen. Now listen close. A couple of guards from the Horton estate are after me. I'll be behind this door covering you with a rod, so you haven't seen me. You understand?
I understand.
That must be them. Remember, any tricks, and I'll start blasting.
I have no intention of being foolish.
Okay, go ahead then. Open the door.
Yes? What is it?
There's been an attempted theft of the Horton diamond, sir. We chased the crook this way. Have you seen anything of him?
Why, no. There hasn't been anyone here tonight.
We'll keep on going. Good night.
They're gone now.
You did all right.
I'm glad you're satisfied.
Hey, what kind of a place is this? All those machines, bottles and things.
This is my laboratory.
What are you, a professor?
Yes, you might...
Hey, what's that?
Your nerves are on edge. It's only my Great Dane, Caesar. Come in, Caesar. We have a visitor.
Hey, what's he growling at me for?
I'm sorry. He always growls at strangers.
Don't like him coming towards me that way. Keep him away, will you?
Come here, Caesar.
He won't listen to you. He's going to spring. Well, this will stop him. Get him off my arm. Take him away, will you?
Here, Caesar. Stop it, I say. Stop it. That's better. I think I'd better put the chain on you, Caesar. Did he hurt you?
Look, I put 3 slugs into that dog. Why isn't he dead? He isn't even wounded.
You must have missed.
You say I missed him, do you? I won't miss him this time. I suppose I missed him that time, eh? Why isn't he dead?
Well, the truth is, in this laboratory, I've created a serum that has the power to defeat death. I call it Serum L. L for life.
You mean the stuff protects you from a bullet or a knife wound?
In a way, yes. Swifter than the eye can see, it heals all wounds. The damage is repaired in a fraction of a second.
Yeah.
My serum is what protected Caesar.
A shot of that stuff and you can't be killed. It sounds screwy, but that dog, 4 slugs and not a mark on him. Look, Professor, I'm going to make a deal with you.
A deal?
Yeah. I'll let you keep on living if you'll give me a shot of that serum.
But that's impossible. It hasn't been perfected
yet. What do you mean it hasn't been perfected? It saved the dog, didn't it?
Yes, of course, but I'm still in the experimental stage. I don't know how long the serum is effective or the condition in which it leaves the body after it is worn off.
You're wasting time, Professor. I'd hate to have to persuade you.
I see. So you understand the responsibility is all yours.
It's all right, Professor. You let me do the worrying. Now, come on, let's have a shot of that stuff.
Very well. If you'll roll up your sleeve.
Sure. And don't try pulling a fast one, Professor. It won't be healthy.
May I ask why you're so anxious to have my serum?
Any guy in my racket who can take a slug and not feel it would be top man.
I see. Just hold still a moment.
All right, go ahead.
That's all.
Hey, my wounds. They're gone. Why, there isn't even a mark on my arm to show where they were.
I told you it healed faster than the eye could see.
Yeah. It's like a miracle. Think of it. I can't be killed. Nothing can stop me now. I can move in on all the rackets and take them all over. Yes, sir, I'll be king of the world.
Hello, Duke. What do you want to see me about? I'm kind of busy.
I won't take up much of your time. I'm after a job.
I'd like to give you one, but I haven't room for another man.
You're wrong. There's one job in your racket that's going to be open soon. Yours.
Mine?
Yeah.
Duke, you've got a funny sense of humor.
Yeah, I know. But this is one time I'm not kidding.
You better be kidding, or it might not be healthy for you.
I don't have to worry about my health anymore.
You'd better go while the going's good.
I like it here. You're the one who's leaving. Right now.
You haven't got a gun, Duke. The boys saw to that. And I have.
You're a little nervous, ain't you, Williams?
Stay where you are. I'll let you have it.
I don't scare easily. Not anymore.
You ask for... Couldn't have missed. I won't this time.
Don't seem to be able to stop me, Williams.
I shot you. I tell you, I shot you. Why did you fall? Oh, it can't be. I put 6 bullets into you. Why did you fall?
Your gun is empty now, Williams. It's just you and me.
No, Duke, don't. I'll do anything you say. Stay away, please.
Too bad, Williams. You should have resigned when I gave you the chance. But you would be stubborn. That's what they'll all get if they stand in my way. ¶¶
Come on in. I'm just totaling up the take for last month. Gonna be quite a haul.
Ah, Duke, you're headed for trouble. You've been expanding too fast, stepping on too many people's toes.
They don't want to get stepped on. They better stay out of my road. They've tried to bump me off a half a dozen times in the past month, and I'm still alive.
Duke, what is it that keeps you up, even after they put a dozen slugs into you?
Your job is to carry out my orders, not to ask questions.
Oh, I didn't mean anything by it.
I hope you didn't. Now, look, I want you to pick up a fast car. We're going after the Horton Diamond tonight.
The Horton Diamond?
Yeah.
Ah, Duke, that's suicide. We're cleaning up right here. Why risk our necks on a dangerous job?
Because I want the Horton Stone. The way I got it figured, we can't miss. Remember, their guns can't stop me. Hey, is 70 the best you can get out of this car?
I got my foot down to the floor now.
Hey, look at that diamond, Mike. Isn't it a beauty? Think of it. I got $500,000 right in my hand.
Yeah, a lot of good it's going to do us if we don't shake that police car.
Yeah, you're right. They're hanging on. We got to shake them.
There's nothing more I can do. I'm pushing this crate as fast as it'll go.
All right, look out for this curve. We're taking it too fast.
Hey, I can't control
look
it.
Look out. We're going over.
They must have been doing all of 70 when they crashed.
Yeah. They'll sure have a hard time identifying this guy behind the wheel. What a mess.
What about the other guy?
Let's have a look. Say, there isn't a mark on him. He's unconscious, but he doesn't appear to be hurt at all.
But he must be after a crash like this.
Take a look for yourself. I tell you, this guy is going to live.
A lot of good it'll do him. After killing two guards of the Horton estate, he's headed for the electric chair.
And now, to go on with the story of the King of the World, as it is written here in the sealed book. Duke Farson, having been duly tried and sentenced for the murders he committed, is being strapped into the electric chair.
Warden, you're wasting your time. This isn't the last mile from me. I'm one guy you can't fry.
All right, Richards, we can proceed now.
Thank you.
Will you examine the body, Doctor?
Sorry to disappoint you, Warden, but I'm not dead.
Yeah, but you must be. No man has ever lived through it.
I'm not like other men, Warden. You can't kill me.
Richards, unstrap the prisoner from the chair. What's happened must be due to a mechanical defect. That must be it.
You look a little pale, Warden. It's good to get out of that chair. It's not very comfortable. But why are you all backing away from me? You afraid I'll hurt you? I'll just take this gun. That's better now. All right, Warden. Start marching. You're gonna lead me to freedom, if you want to live.
Duke.
Let me in, Joe. Quick. That's better. Hey, you look as though you'd seen a ghost, Joe.
The papers are full of stories about your escape. They say the juice was turned on, and yet when it was over, you got up and walked away.
Yeah, that's right. I told them I was one guy too big to be killed.
Look, Duke, I can't afford any trouble with the cops. You know I'm a three-time loser.
Shut up. I'm still giving orders. You'll do as I say. The cops can only send you up for life. I can do worse.
Don't talk like that. Duke, you know you can count on me. I'll do anything you say.
You'd better. I'm going to hole up here for a couple of weeks until the heat's off. Meanwhile, I'm going to make plans, big plans. I'm bigger than just being the king of the underworld. If I organize things right, there's no reason I can't use the underworld to take over the rest of the world. Yeah, that would make me king of the world. Wouldn't be hard to either. Why is that clock so loud? I can't even hear myself talk.
What clock? There isn't any in this apartment.
Are you deaf? Can't you hear it?
No, Duke, honest. I don't hear a thing. You must be imagining things.
I don't know. I don't hear it so loud now either. Yeah, I guess maybe it was my imagination. Yet I could have sworn. Well, never mind. I got other things to think of. Big things.
Why don't you sit down, Duke, and take it easy?
I'm tired of sitting. 3 weeks in this rat trap is enough for anyone. I've had about enough.
The heat's on as big as ever, Duke. I never saw him as anxious to get anyone. Every time I go out, I expect some dick to trail me back to this hideout.
Suppose you let me do the worrying,
sure,
huh?
Sure. I was only talking. Have you been having any more of those attacks lately?
I'm okay. Stop talking about it. It's bad enough without having to be reminded about it. I don't want to hear... Hey, what's that?
What, Duke?
That buzzing sound. Keeps growing louder and louder.
I don't hear nothing.
Listen, you must hear it. It's a fly. Yeah, and it's getting louder. I tell you, I can't stand it.
Fly?
Yeah.
I don't hear it. Wait, there's one over there flying around those cracks.
Well, do something, will you? I can't stand the noise. It's driving me crazy.
Take it easy, Duke. I'm doing my best. Tell it.
Oh, thanks, Joe. It's gone now. For a while, I thought I'd blow my top.
Maybe you'd better see a doctor, Duke. You've been getting these attacks more and more these past 3 weeks.
No doctor can do me any good. There's only one man that can help me.
Who's that?
That's the professor. You remember me, don't you, Professor?
Yes, of course. I've been reading quite a bit about you in the papers lately, Mr. Farson.
Your serum was all right, Professor. It saved me from being electrocuted, but I don't know, these last 3 weeks, something's happened, and I don't like it.
Suppose you tell me about it.
I keep getting attacks. Maybe I'm listening to the radio. Everything's fine. Then all of a sudden it grows louder, as though someone was turning it on full blast.
Mm-hmm.
It pounds on my head until I think I'm going crazy. Professor, I can't stand it. You got to help me.
You recall that when you asked for my serum, I told you it hadn't been perfected?
Well?
That I didn't know what effect it would have on the human body?
Yeah, I know, but you got to help me now. I can't go on this way. I keep waiting for the next attack. Each one is worse than the last.
You remember my great Dane Caesar, don't you?
Yeah, sure. He tried to take a piece out of my throat, didn't he?
I'll open this trap door. You can see him in the cellar.
Huh?
Now, there he is, Mr. Farson.
Well, what's wrong with him? Why does he keep whining like that?
Caesar, too, received an injection of the serum, Mr. Farson, 6 months before you received yours.
Yeah?
Now, every sound he hears is 100-fold greater. I'm speaking to you in normal tone of voice. Yet to Caesar, I'm shouting unbearably loud.
You mean that...
Caesar has passed into a condition where every sound is sheer torment. To be quite frank, he went insane 3 months ago.
Oh. Well, why don't you kill him? Put him out of his misery.
You forget, Mr. Farson, that the serum still protects him from death. He can't die.
And is that what'll happen to me in a few months?
Yes, I'm sorry to say.
But, Professor, there must be something you can do. Maybe you got another serum, huh? Anything. I've got money.
I'm sorry, but it isn't a question of money. I can offer you no help.
I can't go on this way, waiting for each new attack. And then in the end, if only there was an end, if only I could die.
Possibly there is a way out.
There is? Tell me. I'll do anything.
Well, as you know, my serum can prevent death from a dozen bullet wounds. But there might be one way its great healing powers could be defeated.
Yeah, which way is that?
If you were to use an explosive, a powerful explosive, you might blow yourself up into so many pieces that the serum would no longer be able to defeat death.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you mean. One of the mob once had an accident with Nitro. They never found a trace of him. Yeah. Yeah, Nitro. That would do the trick.
Yes, quite possibly. If the attacks continue and they're beyond endurance, it may be your one way of escape.
My one way of escape? Once I thought that with your serum, I'd come to rule the world. Now I'm looking for a way out of it.
You, Duke.
Yeah. You expecting someone else?
No, of course not.
What are you so jittery about?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
I'm okay. What'd the guy you went to see say?
He can't help me. No one can.
What are you gonna do, Duke?
There's nothing I can do but wait. Maybe he was wrong. Maybe I won't get them attacks anymore. After all, just because it happened to the dog doesn't mean that... Hey, what's that? That steady pounding. It's growing louder and louder.
Must be another attack.
I can't stand it. It keeps pounding. Pounding. Louder and louder.
Maybe it's the faucet in the kitchen. It's been leaking lately. I'll have a look at it.
I can't go on this way, I tell you. I can't. It's gone now, but there'll be another attack. And then another.
The faucet was leaking. I just turned it off. Was that what was troubling you, Duke?
Yeah. It's no use. I can't go on this way, waiting for it to happen all the time. And then ending up like that dog.
What dog?
Never mind. Get out the car. We're going on a little trip.
Trip?
Yeah.
Where to, Duke?
Upstate to the old hideout. I'm going to try to take the one way out.
Won't you tell me what we come to this old place for?
You'll see. Come on. What are you looking around for?
Nothing. Nothing at all.
Have you got the shovel?
Yeah. Won't you at least tell me what we need the shovel for?
You're going to do some digging for me in the cellar.
Is there something buried in the cellar?
Yeah, Nitro. All right, here's the cellar door.
Nitro? You mean that's what's buried down there?
Yeah. We stored it here for safe-cracking jobs. Now I got a better use for it.
You aren't going to get me to dig it up. It'd be suicide.
You saved this gun, don't you, Joe? You haven't much choice. Now start down those steps.
But I can't see. It's pitch dark down here.
That's okay. Just feel your way down the steps. We get to the bottom, I'll light a candle.
Duke, please don't make me...
Keep going.
Duke, that was the bottom step. What about lighting a match?
Okay, just a second. I've got one here. Grab him, Ross. I got his gun.
I got him.
Let go of me.
Give me a hand.
I gotta reach that nitro. Let go.
Get him, coppers. Get him or he'll blow us all up.
Ah, you rat. You squealed on me.
Hold that light on him, Jordan.
All right, slip the cuffs on him.
I got him.
You've got to let me get to the nitro. It's the only way I can die.
He's as crazy as a loon.
Yeah, a place for this guy's in a padded cell.
All right, Farson, in you go.
All right.
There. You won't be able to hurt yourself in that nice padded cell. And you won't be able to hear any of those loud noises again,
no,
either.
No noises.
There aren't any radios or watches or automobile horns that can bother you in that cell. It's guaranteed 100% soundproof. Now be a good boy.
Oh, you gotta let me go. I want to die, do you hear? You can't let me live and suffer these attacks. Let me out of here. Let me out, do you hear? I can't stay. Oh, it's starting again. Another attack. It's growing louder and louder. A steady pounding. Oh, it's my heart beating. Growing louder and louder. I can't stop it. I can't stop it. I can't stop it.
And that is the story of the King of the World, as it is written in the sealed book. Years have passed, but Duke Ferguson is still locked up in the padded cell. Day and night he begs to be executed, and yet at the same moment he knows he can't die, that the serum in his blood has given him immortality and sentenced him to a life filled with torturous sounds from which there is no escape. There is no escape. It is so written here in the sealed book. But the sound of the great gong tells me I must close the great book once again.
One moment, keeper of the book. What story from the sealed book will you tell us next time?
Next time? What shall it be? A tale of madness? Of terror? Of dark deeds in far lands, for I have them here, all the stories that ever happened, and many that have yet to come to pass. But I'll find one for you in just a moment.
And now, keeper of the book, have you found the story you'll tell next time?
Yes, I found one. It's a story about a ruthless man who put money above all and wouldn't stop at murder to achieve his ends. The title of the tale is Death spins a web.
Be sure to be with us again next time when the great gong heralds another strange and exciting story from...
The Sealed Book.
The Sealed Book, written by Bob Arthur and David Cogan, is produced and directed by Jock McGregor.
In the annals of the strange and the incredible, the sources of our stories are often those professions which one would not normally associate with tales of the supernatural. One such source is photography. Yet, from the realm of photographic experience comes a story that is no less startling than the others. It is a strange account of a camera and a corpse.
It was not that Virgil Hoyt, a photographer's assistant in St. Paul, Minnesota, was dissatisfied with his chosen profession, but there was one aspect of the work which irritated him profoundly. He felt strongly on the subject of doing camera portraits of the dead. And consequently, whenever such a call came into the studio, he did his best to avoid being sent out. There was, for instance, that summer day in the year 1928 when the head photographer, one Mr. Wickard, found him sulking in the back of the shop.
I thought you were due out at the Fielding home at 2, Hoyt.
Yeah, I was, but... Well, couldn't you go instead, Mr. Wickard?
Aye, why should I?
Well, it's another one of those deathbed jobs, and you know how I feel about them.
I'm not interested in how you feel about them. Now, you'd better get moving or you'll be late.
It was a few minutes after 2 when Virgil Hoyt arrived at the Fielding home. Hoyt followed Mr. Fielding through a dark corridor into a small sunroom at the rear of the house. And there stood a handsome casket. And in the casket lay Mr. Fielding's mother. She'd been an old woman, and unless he was greatly mistaken, a tyrannical one, for even in her death, there was stubborn, unyielding expression in the contours of her face. Virgil Hoyt went quickly and competently to work. He exposed 3 plates in all, and then he returned to the studio and handed them over to the developer, quite content that he'd done a capable piece of work. An hour later, Mr. Wickard, carrying the proofs in his hand, approached him angrily.
Hoyt! I told you I wouldn't have you allowing your personal feelings to interfere with your work.
But I didn't, Mr. Wickard. I did a good job at the Fielding house, the best I could.
Did you really? Well, take a look at these proofs.
Hoyt seized the proofs and stared at them in blank amazement. The old woman's face was completely concealed. It was covered by a thick, cloud-like veil.
I don't understand this, Mr. Wickard. There must be something wrong with the camera.
There's nothing wrong with the camera. I checked it myself. You deliberately fogged those plates, Hoyt. Now go on, get out, you're through.
And so Virgil Hoyt, bewildered and disconsolate, collected his belongings and prepared to leave the studio. But just as he approached the door to the street, it opened suddenly and Mr. Fielding, the son of the dead woman, stepped in.
I've come to pay you for your work.
You don't have to pay us, Mr. Fielding, until you get the pictures.
Well, but you see, I decided that I don't want the pictures. I realize it sounds a little foolish, but I thought it all over and... it wouldn't be fair to my mother.
How do you mean?
She was a very strong-willed woman, and the thing she hated above all else was to be photographed. She never had a picture taken in her whole life. Her spirit had been hovering near us. It would have done everything in its power to ruin those plates.
It was then that Virgil Hoyt informed his client that the plates had been ruined. That though there had been no defect in the camera... and though the dead woman had been clearly visible through the lens at the moment he took her picture, still, on the proofs, her face had been concealed by a heavy veil. In the minds of both of them arose the tantalizing question, could the old woman's iron will still have made itself felt even after death? It was the only conceivable explanation for this haunting mystery. A mystery incredible but true.
The Avenger.
The road to crime ends in a trap that justice sets. Crime does not pay.
Thank you.
Avenger, sworn enemy of evil, is actually Jim Brandon, a famous biochemist. Through his numerous scientific experiments, Brandon has perfected two inventions to aid him in his crusade against crime as the Avenger. The telepathic indicator by which he is able to pick up thought flashes, and the secret diffusion capsule, which cloaks him in the black light of invisibility. Brandon's assistant, the beautiful Fern Collier, is the only one who shares his secrets and knows that he is the man the underworld fears as the Avenger. And now, the Avenger and the Eyes of Shiva.
Come in. Oh, good evening, Mr. Thurmont.
Hello, Croft.
Have a chair, Thurmont. What's on your mind?
As though you didn't know.
Well, I can guess, of course. When a young man about town calls on a gambler in his office...
It means he's broke, Croft. I want you to okay another IOU for me.
Thurmont, you're in too deep. I can't give you any more credit.
Listen, Croft, don't try any of those cold shoulder tactics on me. I've lost a fortune in this club.
That's just the point. You already owe me $35,000, Thurmont. When are you going to pay up?
You'll get your money, but I've got to have a little time.
That's what you've been saying for a month. Now, let's get down to cases, Thurmont. Either you pay up or I use my own methods of collecting.
I see. You're all set to give me the works, aren't you, Croft?
If necessary.
Give me one more week and I can raise the money.
Sorry. I need more than your word for that, Thurmont. May I ask where you expect to get that kind of money?
From my Aunt Lydia.
Mrs. Wimbersham?
Yes.
What makes you think she'll advance you $35,000 just for the asking?
She'll have to.
And if she doesn't?
Then, well, I have another way of getting it.
No, Thurmont. I can't accept vague promises any longer. I'll give you 24 hours to raise the dough.
I can't do it in that time. You'll have to make a week, Croft, if you want to collect your money.
What's your plan, then? I've got to know my chances.
Well, you've heard of my aunt's rubies, the famous Eyes of Shiva.
Who hasn't?
I've got a customer for those rubies, Croft.
You mean you plan to steal the rubies from your aunt?
Well, if you want to put it as crudely as that, yes. They'll be mine someday anyway, so I might as well get them now when they can do me the most good.
And if you're caught?
I don't think Aunt Lydia would prosecute the family name and all that.
This brave customer you spoke of, who is he? It seems unbelievable to me that anyone would be foolish enough to buy such famous stones. Those rubies can never be put on the market. They'll be too hot.
My customer will give me $200,000 for them, and he has no desire to market them.
$200,000? Who has that kind of dough?
A rich Indian importer. He's tried to buy the rubies from my aunt directly, but she won't sell. You see, those stones have a special significance to people of his country. At one time, those rubies were the eyes of an ancient statue of the goddess Shiva. This rich Indian owns that statue now, and he wants to have the eyes replaced.
Well, I don't know. That statue stuff's all Greek to me. I never even heard about this Shiva goddess.
You should have, Croft. Shiva is the goddess of thugs. She has seven arms and strangles all who do not please her. I'd say she speaks your language, Croft.
Sounds like a very interesting dame.
Well, Croft, in case my aunt refuses to give me the money... Are you willing to give me that week's grace to get the rubies?
All right, Thurmont. I'll play ball.
Good.
Take a few days to work on your aunt for the money, though, before you risk stealing the rubies. $35,000 in a hand is worth more than $200,000 in some goddess's eyes.
It's a deal, Croft.
We have a date then, Thurmont. A week from tonight. Let's have a drink on it.
Oh, Jim, it looks as though everyone in the Blue Book has turned out for this opening.
Well, it certainly does, Fern. A nightclub opening, too.
I guess the place is made.
If they squeeze us in any tighter here, we won't dare eat any dinner.
Oh, now we must avoid that catastrophe at any cost.
Oh, Jim, help me pick out the celebrities.
Well, let's see. There's the mayor over there.
Oh.
And at the table next to him are Mrs. Lydia Wimbersham and her nephew, Hollis Thurmo.
Oh, I've heard of her. She's the richest woman in the state, isn't she?
Yes, but young Hollis is doing everything he can to relieve her of that honor. Oh, Fern, she's wearing her rubies, the earrings.
Jim, are those the famous Eyes of Sheba rubies?
That's right, Fern.
Oh, good heavens, I never thought I'd see such jewels in a nightclub.
Mrs. Wimbersham doesn't appear in public very often, but when she does, she makes folks sit up and take notice.
Oh, gosh, this is exciting. Jim, let's dance. I want to get a closer look at those rubies.
All right, Fern, let's go.
Well, Aunt Lydia, did you have a good time?
I did, Hollis. You were here to invite me. It's quite a nice club.
I suppose you noticed that your rubies got more attention than the floor show.
Well, this is the first time I've worn them in a year.
I was surprised. Why did you wear them tonight, Aunt Lydia?
It's your uncle's birthday, Hollis. When he was living, I always wore the rubies on his birthday. And since his death, I've continued to do so. You knew that.
Of course. I'd forgotten.
Hollis, what's the matter? You've seemed preoccupied all evening.
Oh, it's the same old thing, Auntie.
You're not having money troubles again, Hollis.
I'm afraid I am, Aunt Lydia.
How much are you overdrawn this time?
It's worse than that. I might as well tell you the truth, Auntie. I'm in debt for $35,000.
Hollis, how did that happen? Why, I've always given you a generous allowance. Hollis, have you been gambling again? After you promised me.
I know. I'm wrong, and I admit it. But that doesn't satisfy my creditors.
Hollis, I won't give you the money this time.
What am I to do, then?
I don't know. You gave me your word when I paid your debts last time that it wouldn't happen again. And now this. You'll have to settle your debts as best you can on your allowance.
That sounds final, Aunt Lydia.
It is, Hollis. Believe me, my boy, it's for your own good. It's high time you settled down and lived on your income.
All right. Just forget it, Auntie. Don't lecture me tonight.
Do you want James to drive you home, Hollis?
No. I was hoping you'd invite me in for a nightcap.
Oh, of course. Come along. That's all for tonight, James. Good night. We'll have to serve ourselves, though. I gave the servants the night off.
That's all right, Auntie. Give me your key. I'll open the door.
Here. Servants have left all the lights burning again. Go into the library, Hollis. I'll join you in a minute.
Where are you going, Auntie?
I want to put these earrings in the safe in the living room. Go ahead. Mix yourself something to drink, Hollis.
Right. Don't be long.
I'll send these rubies back to the vault tomorrow. I feel uneasy having them here in the safe. Oh, it's a relief to get them off. They're so heavy. Let me see. The combination is 3107. There. Into your little box, back in the safe. Oh, Hollis, you startled me.
I'm sorry. I came in to ask if you think we might find the makings of a sandwich. That nightclub dinner was on the meager side.
Oh, of course. I'll see what's in the icebox. You know, Hollis, I don't think I'll ever wear the Eyes of Sheba in public again.
Why not?
Well, I had the strangest feeling tonight. Oh, it's silly, I know, but suddenly I thought of the rubies as real eyes. Huge, glaring red eyes staring back at all those people.
Come now, Auntie. None of your morbid fancies tonight.
All right, Hollis. I'm sorry. Bring the drinks into the kitchen and help me with the sandwiches.
Right. I'll be with you in a moment.
I hear footsteps in this room. Who's there? Who are you? What do you want?
I want the combination to your safe, Mrs. Wimbersham.
No. No. Get out of here.
Now, if you'll just be calm and do as I say, you won't get hurt. No use to reach for the phone. The wires are cut.
This is an outrage.
Come downstairs and open up that safe, or... Well, I'm prepared to kill you if I have to. It's up to you.
All right. I'll come.
After you, Mrs. Wimbersham.
You're after the rubies, of course. But what good will they do you? No one will dare buy them.
I'll worry about that.
This way.
Okay. Now suppose you open up the safe. 3107. Very simple. Should have been able to figure that out for myself. All right, take out the rubies.
What sort of game is this? They're not here. You've already taken them.
No stalling now. Fish them out.
They're not here, I tell you. Look for yourself.
Stand back. They're not here. And you knew they weren't. Talk fast, Mrs. Wimbersham. Where are those rubies?
I don't know. I put them in the safe less than 2 hours ago, and now they're gone.
You're lying. Where are they?
Honestly, I don't know.
I'm going to get those rubies, Mrs. Wimbersham, if I have to choke the truth out of you.
Believe me, I'd tell you if I knew.
Well, we'll see about that. Talk!
Take your hands away. You're choking.
Where are they?
I don't know. See, I...
Answer quick, or I'll finish the job.
I don't know what happened to them. I don't know.
Where are they?
My rubies. The eyes of Shiva.
Back to the Avenger and the Eyes of Shiva.
Honestly, Jim, I feel terribly sorry for Inspector White. I'm afraid he'll be out of office if he doesn't break the Wimbersham murder soon.
Well, Fern, it's been almost a week now since it happened, and the newspapers are playing it up big. Frankly, it's a very puzzling one.
Jim, haven't you been able to pick up anything on the telepathic indicator that might help?
No, I haven't. If I'd been at the indicator the night the murder was committed, I probably could have. But by the time we found out about it, the strong emotional impulses that surround a death by violence had weakened, and I could pick up only confused impressions.
Jim, do you think Mrs. Wimbersham's nephew could have done it?
Well, evidently the police don't think so, Fern. They released Thurmond yesterday. Oh, that must be Inspector White now. Let him in, will you, Fern?
Yes, Jim. Hello, Inspector. Come in, Jim's waiting for you.
Thanks, Fern.
In the laboratory, Inspector.
Well, good morning, Inspector.
Well, nothing good about it, Brendan.
Have a chair and let's hear what's on your mind, Inspector.
Well, okay, Jim. I'm going to put my cards on the table. I'm up a blind alley on this Wimbersham case.
I see by the papers that you've released Thurmond.
Well, we had to. We had an airtight alibi, for the murder at least.
That leaves you high and dry for a suspect, doesn't it, Inspector?
Never higher and never drier, Fern.
Well, Inspector, I don't know whether you want my advice or not. Usually you don't.
Stop rubbing it in, Jim. You got any ideas? Spill them. I'm open to anything.
Okay, Inspector. If you're really asking me, I'd say that Hollis Thurmond had such a good motive for both the murder and the theft that he might be the connecting link between them, provided both crimes were not committed by the same person.
Well, we've got a tail on him every minute of the day and night. And if he gets in touch with anybody, we'll know it.
And where is he now?
At the country club, playing golf.
Playing golf? His aunt's death couldn't have affected him much.
I've got an idea, Inspector. Call off your men and let Fern and me trail Thurmond for the rest of the day.
Okay. But call in a report to my office every hour, Jim. And don't give out any statements to the newspaper.
Why, Inspector, you used to love
now publicity. Listen here, Jim. Just because you got me up a tree, you
can't... all right, Inspector. No feature stories until you solve the case. Come on, Fern. You and I are going to brush up on our golf.
Oh, Jim, I've hit another ball out of bounds.
My dear Miss Collier, the idea is to keep your eye on the ball, remember?
Yes, that's just the trouble. I'm trying to keep one eye on the ball and the other on Hollis Thurmond playing there ahead of us.
Oh.
Jim, I'm convinced that young Thurmond can't be guilty.
And why not, Fern?
He's playing too good a game. His conscience must be clear.
Now, he's good, all right. We've been following him for 16 holes, and he's made at least 10 of them in par.
We're in good company. That man playing behind us is good, too.
Yes, I've noticed that.
Look, Jim.
Yeah?
Thurmond is swinging off for the 17th hole. Let's watch for a minute.
All right, if you think it'll improve your game. I can't believe it. He sliced that one badly.
He hit it way out of bounds in the rough.
He's setting up another one. He sliced that one, too. And it landed in exactly the same place as the other.
That 17th hole must be a jinx. Look, Jim, Thurmond is mad. He's going to stop playing.
Do you folks mind if I play through you?
Oh, no, not at all. Go ahead.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Not at all. Well, that fellow's just as good as Thurmond.
Now he's ready for the 17th hole. Wonder how he'll make out.
Oh, Thurmond's going toward the clubhouse, Fern. We better go. We don't want to give him a chance to slip away from here without us.
All right, Jim. Jim, did you see that?
Yes. That fellow who played through us sliced his ball just like Thurmond did.
And it landed in the same place, too. But he's going after his.
Now, that's a very strange coincidence. I wonder...
Jim, we'd better hurry if we want to catch up with Thurmond.
Yeah, right, Fern. Come on. Did Thurmond come out of the clubhouse yet, Fern?
Yes, a few moments ago, Jim. He went around to get his car.
I just called the inspector. He says we're to stay with Thurmond.
Oh, we'd better get in the car, then, and be ready to follow.
Right.
I think we're on a cold trail, though. Thurmond hasn't even spoken to anyone out here.
Help! Help! Get the police!
What's happened?
Mr. Thurmond, he's been strangled in his car.
Call Inspector White at police headquarters, attendant.
Yes, sir.
Tell him to get out here right away.
Yes, sir.
Oh, Jim, I can't believe it. Why, only a few moments
Fern,
ago,
I want you to get a caddy and go down to the rough and get those golf balls.
The golf balls? Why, what in the world can they have to do with
it? Never mind that now. Get those golf balls and bring them back here.
All right, Jim.
And in the meantime, I'll see if I can pick up the trail of Thurmond's murderer.
Well, Brandon, now that we're back at headquarters and can't be overheard, what have you got to say for yourself?
Not a thing, Inspector. Evidently, Thurmond's murderer was waiting for him in his car. Thurmond was strangled in exactly the same way as his aunt.
It happened very suddenly, Inspector. Why, we just gave Thurmond a few minutes to drive around the clubhouse in his car so that we could follow
him. Don't worry about that, Fern. If the murderer hadn't caught up with him there, it would have happened somewhere else. But the newspapers are screaming for my scalp, nonetheless.
We'll get the murderer, Inspector. All we have to do is find that man who followed Fern and me on the golf course. He's our man.
What makes you so sure of that, Jim?
Because Fern found only one golf ball when she went down to the rough. Thurmond hit two down. And our suspect hit one down there. Now, if our suspect really went down there to recover his own ball, he would either have picked up his own and left Thurmond's two, or picked up all three. Since he left one ball there, he must have picked up Thurmond's two. It was too far out of bounds for ordinary stray balls.
Where does that get us?
Yes, Jim. I don't see what difference it makes whose golf balls he picked up.
If those two golf balls Thurmond sliced into the rough had the rubies in them, it would make plenty of difference, wouldn't it?
Jim, do you think...
I certainly do, Inspector. Thurmond deliberately knocked those balls into the rough for somebody to pick up. And we know who recovered those balls.
We do? Who?
Jim means we know what the man looks like.
Inspector, I want to see every picture you've got of known criminals in this state. Come on, Fern, we're going to work.
Okay.
Well, this batch of pictures just came in this morning. Mostly parole jumpers believed headed this way.
Well, now that sounds like a good bet. No local criminal would have taken such risks of being recognized. Here, Fern, you look through that batch.
Yeah. Oh, this is the craziest case I've ever worked on. None of it makes any sense.
Well, it's beginning to, Inspector.
Well, not to me.
Be patient for another day or two, Inspector, and you'll have the newspapers eating out of your hand.
Jim, here he is.
What?
This is the man who played through us on the golf course.
Why, sure enough. Clyde Devers, jewel thief, served sentences in...
Looks like you've hit on something, Jim.
Inspector, have your men track down this golf ball.
What for, Jim?
I believe Devers was fronting this job for someone. Let's shoot for the jackpot, Inspector. This is Clutcher Croft's place, Vern. According to the inspector's list, Croft buys the type of golf ball Devers used.
Oh, but what makes you think Croft is our likeliest prospect, Jim?
Young Thurmont owed him money.
Well, it's worth the try.
Now, that's Croft's office straight through the entrance hall.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know what to say. And don't be frightened, because when Croft opens the door to let you in, the Avenger will be right behind you.
I'm not afraid, Jim.
Good girl. Go ahead, then.
Come in.
Mr. Croft?
Yes? What do you want? Come in and close the door.
Mr. Croft, I'm from the firm Byers and Trimbley. We're in charge of settling the Wimbersham estate, and I'm getting a list of Hollis Thurmont's creditors. What was the amount Mr. Thurmont owed you?
Since when are gambling debts paid off by an estate? You wouldn't happen to be a detective, would you?
Why, no, I'm...
Devers! Devers, come in here!
What's up, Croft?
This dame. From the police, I think. Lock the doors, Devers. Now, speak up, miss. Just who are you?
I just came here on a hunch. I thought I might find the Eyes of Sheba Rubies here.
Why, this is the dame that was on the golf course.
The day you murdered Thurmont, isn't that right, Devers?
Who's that? Where did that voice come from?
From the Avenger, Croft.
The Avenger? We're sunk, Clutcher.
Not yet, Devers. Grab the girl.
No.
We can't see the Avenger, but we can see her. Cover her with your gun.
Reach, you...
You're playing the fool, Devers. Croft is double-crossing you. He's edging toward the inner office to make his getaway.
No, you don't, Croft. You're not hanging this rap on me.
Take it easy, Devers.
Stay where you are, or I'll drill you.
It's every man for himself now, Devers.
Come back here, Croft.
Oh! You...
Oh,
you shot... Oh!
You've had that coming for a long time, Clutcher. My gun.
Pick it up, young lady. I knocked it out of your hand, Devers.
I have it, Avenger.
Stand back against the wall, Devers. Shoot him if he makes a move.
It was Croft, I tell you. He hired me. He engineered the whole thing.
Croft,
he's the man
you... dead, Devers. Save your story for the police.
Talk now.
At last, I was beginning to think he'd never break.
All right, Devers. Why did you kill Lydia Wimbersham?
Because I thought she was lying when she said she didn't know where the rubies were.
Did it occur to you that Thurmont might have taken them?
No, I didn't know anything about the Thurmont angle until after I failed to get the rubies. Then Croft told me Thurmont must have beaten us to it.
But by that time, Thurmont was in jail for questioning concerning the murder of his aunt.
Yeah. We just had to sit tight and wait until he was free to make contact with his customer.
When did you first suspect that the rubies were in the golf ball?
Not until Thurmond sliced them into the rough. I'm an expert on golf. I could see that he deliberately sliced those balls.
Then, after you recovered the balls, you went back to the clubhouse and killed Thurmond?
Croft told me to. He was afraid Thurmond would begin squawking to the police when he discovered Croft had framed him.
What was your next move, Devers?
Well, he tried to contact Thurmond's customer, the rich Indian importer, but discovered he'd sailed quietly for home as soon as he heard about Mrs. Wimbersham's murder. He was scared of getting involved, I guess.
So the rubies weren't worth a penny to you and Croft because the one and only customer for them was on the high seas.
Yeah. And by that time, we were wishing we'd never heard of the Eyes of Shiva.
Any more questions, Jim?
No. That just about cleans up the case, Inspector.
Okay. That's all, Devers. The charge is murder. Three of them. Take them away, boys.
Jim, I still don't understand. If that Indian importer had sailed for home, why did Thurmond go ahead with the plan for delivering the jewels to him?
Thurmond didn't know the Indian had fled, Fern, and he was desperate for money.
Oh, good grief. No wonder the inspector said this was the craziest case he ever worked on.
Well, you can say that again, Fern. This one almost had the Avenger baffled, too.
All characters, names, places, and plots used in the Avenger program are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental.
This is a thought. Remember, listen for another adventure of...
The Avenger.
That's this show for this week, but there's more old-time radio at relicradio.com. Something new every day. You'll find all our shows listed there, past episodes from them, links to subscribe, listen, download, whatever you choose. There's also a link to our forum, Facebook page, Shoutcast stream. All the goodies are at relicradio.com. Don't forget, if you'd like to help support this and all the Relic Radio shows, you can do so by clicking on the support button. I appreciate it if you're able to help out. Thank you very much to those who have. And thanks for joining me today. I'll be back next Tuesday with another hour of old-time radio on the Relic Radio Show.